Hello and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Catherine Irving. On this week's recap, we will go over some of the gas prices that we are seeing here on Kodiak.
These are globally traded commodities, so we are, while we are quite removed geographically, we still are very much subject to the global price pressures.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at kodiakhealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
First up, the Kodiak Electric Association is holding its annual elections for the Board of Directors. There are 3 seats open this year of the 9 total seats and 4 candidates for those seats. All 3 of the board members whose seats are up for re-election are running. The first candidate, Ron Akaragi, is the current vice chairman of the board. According to the mailed ballot sent out to co-op members, Akaragi says he hopes to use his business background to make the co-op as energy efficient as possible in the future. Tyler Cornelis, another current board member running for re-election, is the Environmental Programs Director at the Kodiak Area Native Association. As part of his job, he works with Native villages across the archipelago on efficient and sustainable energy. According to his statement in the ballot, he also wants to make KEA even more energy efficient than it already is, and use his position on the board to contribute to the improvement of Kodiak at large. He's been on the board since 2020. Ben Milstein, another incumbent board member running for re-election, is the founder of Kodiak Island Brewing Company. According to his statement, he has been on KEA's board for over 15 years. He is also a member of other local boards, including the Island Trails Network. Aaron Griffin is the only candidate on the ballot who has not served on the Electric Association's board before. He is currently the fire chief for the U.S. Coast Guard Fire Department in Kodiak. According to a flyer he posted on Facebook, his priorities include affordability and reliability for customers and adding some, quote, fresh ideas into the co-op. Griffin has also served as an assembly member for the Kodiak Island Borough from 2012 to 2015 and as a member of the Board of Education. Approval of the 2025 annual membership meeting minutes is also on the ballot this year. Voters must mail their ballots back to the Kodiak Electric Association by April 10th in order to have their votes counted for this election. Next up, the Alaska Department of Natural Resources is planning to renovate the Fort Abercrombie Ranger Station in Kodiak, according to an online notice posted by the state last week. The ranger station hasn't been renovated since a floor replacement in the early 2000s. The building has been on the division's maintenance list since 2013. The department estimates the renovations could cost up to $1 million. Wendy Saylors, the public information officer for the State Division of Parks and Rec, says that the station was initially a manufactured home built before the 1960s and got put up in its final form at Fort Abercrombie in 1980.
It is a manufactured home unit. They basically lifted it up and then stacked framed walls around the bottom for a downstairs office area. I know it features 1960s, 1970s era kitchen and bathroom furnishings that have not been renovated since.
Updating these 60-year-old furnishings is going to be a big part of the renovation, since the upstairs kitchen and bathroom will be getting completely redone. But that's not all that needs fixing.
First of all, there's hard water that comes through the water pipes there, so filtration is something that needs to happen, and there's an issue with the hot water and the hot water pressure for the whole building.
There is also an issue with the building's heat, which the renovations hope to address by fixing cracked and single-paned windows. Saylors says the main goal of the renovation is to make things nicer for staff.
We do bring in or hire seasonal staff, and a lot of times, as you know, it's hard to find housing anywhere in the state, but especially in a town like Kodiak. Some changes to that area is going to basically make it easier to recruit and retain staff.
According to the notice, some of the other key renovations include updating the downstairs restroom to be ADA compliant and adding a new washer and dryer. Saylors says the department expects to start working on the building sometime in fiscal year 2027, which will start on July 1st. She says the renovation could take up to 2 years. According to Saylors, the state extended the deadline for bids up until April 2nd. Next up, 5 kelp farmers from around Kodiak Island have started the Kodiak Ocean Growers Co-op. It's a member-owned and operated organization that hopes to benefit all of the archipelago's kelp farmers in the growing local industry. Kelp farmer Tollef Monson, who operates Alaska Seagreens with his wife Adelia on the west side of Kodiak Island, says the idea for the co-op started 2 years ago. He says the hope is that farmers will collectively be able to communicate with buyers about a price that they can survive on.
So each farmer didn't have to go to each buyer and try and, you know, negotiate. The co-op can be kind of a place of negotiation, but also for aggregation for the, you know, total amount of kelp that a buyer wants.
Monson says the goal is for each participating farm to sell its kelp to the cooperative, which then sells to the buyers. They're working with at least two main buyers this year, Macro Oceans and Cascadia Seaweed in British Columbia. The co-op's five farms are diverse in terms of size, location, and quantities of kelp they grow. Monson, for example, says his kelp farm on the west side of the island has to harvest sooner than farmers on the east side.
Our side tends to run out of nutrients in June, early June, and so we need to have our kelp out of the water, whereas the town guys, the east side folks, tend to have, you know, a longer growing season, I think because they're connected to the entire Pacific Ocean out here, so there's a lot more upwelling of nutrients.
Monson says he's hoping to harvest between 80,000 and 100,000 pounds of kelp at his farm this summer. He says the whole cooperative plans to grow 1 million pounds of mainly sugar kelp this year. Monson says that's, quote, totally reasonable, unquote, especially with the new Green Wave kelp hatchery in Kodiak providing competitively priced, locally raised kelp seed. Local kelp processing is also scaling up, with Kodiak Island Wild Source getting a significant upgrade to its kelp processing capabilities this year.
It's just too hard for any one individual to build this industry alone. I mean, think about salmon when they started. It wasn't just one cannery or one fisherman. So, you know, if it's community oriented and we can all work together, then we're all going to succeed together.
Monson expects two new kelp farms in the Kodiak archipelago will start up and join the co-op next year. The Kodiak Island Cooperative is accepting new kelp farmers, members, and interns for this summer. More information can be found on their website, kodiak-ocean-growers.org. Next up, three proposals related to fish hatcheries failed last week at the Alaska Board of Fisheries statewide meeting. Although none of the changes to hatcheries passed, the board is discussing future changes to the production of hatchery pink and chum salmon. Here's my reporting for KMXT News. Earlier this month, the Alaska Board of Fisheries voted 4-3 to take no action on a proposal that would have placed a moratorium on all of the hatcheries in the state. That would prevent the hatcheries from upping the amount of eggs they can take from pink and chum salmon in the future. A few board members, including member Tom Carpenter, spoke about the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game enacting something like this proposal in the future.
I'm not in favor of the way this proposal is the direction of this. I am interested in the concept, and that's why I brought this idea up.
Proponents of this moratorium argue that hatchery fish could be competing with wild salmon for limited resources, and that could potentially be causing species like Chinook or king salmon to decline. Fish and Game Research agrees that there is a possibility this is happening. Research from several different studies has also found that hatchery chum and pink salmon stray from their home streams more than other species. This allows them to interbreed with wild populations. Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association Director Tina Fairbanks says that hatchery salmon may not pass on good genes when bred with wild salmon.
That information is still coming out, but they have determined that for hatchery strays in the wild, in the first generation, there is reduced relative reproductive success, which means that hatchery pink salmon spawning in the wild produce about half as many offspring as wild stocks spawning in the wild.
Board members were split. The data presented at the meeting was over 10 years old, and some members wanted to wait for updated information. Here's board member Olivia Hanahi-Irwin.
I am struggling to be able to commit to a reduction right now, but that does not mean that I don't think that there are adverse effects of hatchery straying, us not having reasonable segregation established. We need to clean up this process.
Irwin wasn't sure what that would look like, but emphasized that they need more information sooner rather than later. According to Fairbanks, who oversees the Kodiak Island hatcheries, the science indicating that hatchery fish are not having an impact on wild populations outweighs the science indicating that they do. She says that other factors, like warming waters, are playing a bigger role in the downward spiral of king salmon populations.
We believe that there's a great deal of science that shows evidence that competition between Alaska hatchery pink salmon and Chinook or other species is not likely to be a major driver of the trends that are being laid at the feet of hatcheries.
Fairbanks says that if the board ever passes a proposal like this statewide, it could have big consequences for commercial, sport, and subsistence fishermen in the Kodiak region.
Their lives and their livelihoods are really up for grabs when some of these proposals come through. And so being able to make sure that people understand your fishery or how important economically or culturally these resources are is imperative.
Board members said they hope the commissioner and fish and game biologists will take the lead on this issue going forward. Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang told the board that he has already reduced the amount of hatchery fish that are released in some areas of the state, like Crawfish Inlet near Sitka. Lang says he's ready to take a deeper look into the impacts of a reduction like this in Prince William Sound.
I think there may be one or two hatcheries that we need to take a good close look at and find out whether we're having unacceptable stray rates. And you have my commitment doing that moving forward.
The Board of Fisheries is tentatively scheduled to meet for a work session in October. It is unclear whether they will discuss hatcheries at this meeting. In the meantime, stakeholders like Fairbanks are once again playing the waiting game. Next up, from Alaska Public Media, the Alaska legislature is on the verge of passing a major election reform bill. The House approved Senate Bill 64 on Monday in a 23-16 vote, after the state Senate gave it the green light last year. It's a bipartisan compromise. Minority Republican Representative Sarah Vance, a staunch conservative from Homer, says it's a nuts-and-bolts bill that doesn't give either side an advantage. She says it simply makes it easier to vote and harder to cheat.
We aren't trying to get a certain outcome with this. We are boiling this down to how we conduct elections so that each voter, regardless of how they vote, has the confidence that it's going to count. And that it's going to be secure, and that the voter rolls are going to be accurate.
The bill would make a variety of notable changes to absentee voting. It seeks to speed up ballot counting and reporting, provides postage-paid return envelopes, and stands up a new ballot tracking and curing system. That means if voters make a mistake, like forgetting a signature or writing down the wrong ID number, the Division of Elections would give them a chance to fix it. The bill would also make it easier to remove a voter from the state's active rolls. Senator Bill Wilikowski, an Anchorage Democrat who shepherded the bill through the legislature, says there's a lot more he wanted to include, but he says lawmakers wanted a compromise.
We're going to agree on the things that we can agree on, things that just fundamentally make our elections better. And after 10 years, I think this bill does that.
The Senate is expected to approve the House's changes to the bill as soon as this week. That would send it to Governor Mike Dunleavy. The governor's office declined to say whether Dunleavy plans to sign or veto the bill. Last up, gasoline and heating fuel price shock is hitting Kodiak. Longtime local resident Cheryl Nugent says she just paid her most expensive single delivery heating fuel bill ever, $818.23. Petromarine, the only heating fuel provider in Kodiak, charged her $5.60 per gallon when they filled up her residential tank earlier this month. As recently as January, heating fuel in Kodiak cost $4.10 per gallon. Petromarine's local manager for its North Pacific Fuel office told KMXT that the company had no comment regarding the price spike. A representative of its parent company did not respond to requests for comment either. But we know that global energy markets have been reacting to disruptions stemming from the U.S. and Israel's war with Iran. In the broader financial markets, contracts for heating oil futures are trading for about 80% more now than a month ago. Energy prices in general are up everywhere.
We are in a global market.
That's Alaska economist Mike Jones with the Institute of Economic and Social Research at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
These are globally traded commodities, so we are, while we are quite removed geographically, we still are very much subject to the global price pressures.
For example, regular unleaded gasoline in Kodiak jumped up from $4.68 per gallon last month to more than $5 at several pumps across the island's road system this week. Similarly, the price of Jet A fuel has spiked 100% globally this month, causing some larger airlines in the state and regional ones like Alaska Seaplanes to add on fuel surcharges or increase airfares.
If you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide or experiencing a mental health or substance use crisis, 988 provides connection to free, confidential support. There is hope. The Lifeline works. For 24/7 confidential support, just call, text, or chat 988. This message is brought to you by the Kodiak Area Native Association.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of KMXT's Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Catherine Irving. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.